Hey guys, let me start off by presenting you with a utopia. Imagine a world where we're no longer reliant on fossil fuels. A place where the energy that powers your laptops, that turns on these very lights, that runs the data centers of Azure, is all completely carbon-free and clean. Where the power plants are completely safe, and the energy and the materials required to produce this energy are wholly abundant on this earth. This is the utopia that General Fusion is trying to make a reality. So in this talk, what we'll share with you is how General Fusion is using containers and Kubernetes to accelerate their development of a fusion power plant. Before I go any further, let me introduce myself. My name is Jason Poon, and I'm a senior software developer at Microsoft. With me on stage here today is Jonathan Fraser, a software architect at General Fusion. And I'll pass it off to him to introduce General Fusion and the challenges they've been having with data.
Thank you, Jason. As Jason said, I am a software architect for General Fusion. General Fusion is a small startup company based out of Vancouver, BC, who has the somewhat ambitious goal of producing the world's first commercial fusion power plant. The company was founded in 2002 by Dr. Michel LaBerge and has since grown to over 65 employees, about 50 of which are physicists and engineers, and has collected about $100 million in funding. And what that money has gone to is building what you see here on the screen. What these are our fusion machines, or plasma machines, as we might say. And the goal of these machines is to iterate the quality, temperature, and lifetime of plasmas so that we can compress them to fusion conditions and eventually produce power. Now, how these machines operate is every 5 minutes or so, we'll charge a bunch of capacitors and we'll dump a large amount of energy into these machines, and they'll make a plasma discharge that lasts for about 2 milliseconds or so. But during that 2 milliseconds, we have a whole array of sensors collecting data about temperature, currents, voltages, magnetic fields, and that all gets sent back to our data acquisition equipment. We collect about 200 megabytes of raw data on a given shot, but we'll have 2 or 3 machines running, and each of them will be taking shots at about every 5 minutes. On a good day, we'll collect about 10 gigabytes of data. So what we're working with here is a way to improve our analysis of this data and over the large data set. Yeah. So as I said, we start with the raw sensor data that comes out of machines, but the raw data that we collect out of these machines is not very useful. It's voltages on a digitizer. So we combine that with calibration data, which is provided us from our engineers and from our physicists, and mix that in with some processing code to produce what we call physics data. This physics data is the real data that we care about. It is the actual currents in the plasma, it's the magnetic fields, the temperatures, all the things that tell us how well things are going. Our physicists and our engineers look at the data, and then they iterate both the machines, but they also might come back and tell us that the calibrations are wrong, or the processing code's wrong. And that means we have to go back and we have to review all of that data that was done with the original processing code or the original calibration data and correct for it and adjust what our iterations are going to be. So there are some challenges in this workflow. Fusion research has been around for quite a while, and there are a lot of tools. People have their own workflows for doing things, their own techniques. You have things written in MATLAB. You have things written in R. You have things written in Fortran, of all languages. And so whatever solution we have for working with this big data set, it has to work with all of these existing tools. We also have the issue of trying to schedule that processing. So when you have to reprocess that big batch of data, that you're able to break that data up into components and then chew on it in a timely manner. There's the other issue of data provenance. Now, this one's a tricky one and a new one. And what ends up happening is when an engineer or one of our scientists pushes a new calibration or pushes a new processing pipeline, we need to be able to go back and figure out why we made decisions previously and what new information this adjustment is telling us. And so we have to be able to look back through that history of data and see what changed. And so that's a very critical requirement to be able to see how these adjustments are affecting our downstream results and conclusions. And then finally, we need this data available for both internal consumption and external consumption so that we can relay to our partners, such as Microsoft or other the greater physics community, the greater plasma physics community. So working with Microsoft, we think we have a half-decent solution, and I'm going to pass it back to Jason to sort of describe the technology stack that we went through and how we overcame some of these challenges.
Perfect. So as Jonathan mentioned, there's four requirements that we need to solve for. So for those of you who have been paying attention or at least read the title of the talk, you'll know where we're going with this, but allow me to indulge you and kind of share with you the due diligence we did to investigate the other solutions that we looked at. So number one, obviously, is Apache Hadoop. So that is obviously the big dog in the big data world. It helps us solve kind of the job scheduling part of it, but we're still left with having to refactor or port all these different processing codes, whether it be Fortran, Python, or whatever code to the Hadoop languages. We get the similar same set of pros and cons with Apache Spark and with Azure Data Factory. So let me now introduce what we did. Firstly, we kind of use Docker. So Docker allows us to package all these disparate languages processing codes. So I, in my professional career, have never seen a line of Fortran. And thankfully, with Docker, that can remain to be so. So once we have all these containers, once we have all this code containerized, how do we then manage its compute? How do we then manage its execution and its runtime? That's kind of where Kubernetes comes in. So as Scott Guthrie mentioned in his keynote this morning, Kubernetes is one of the orchestrators supported by Azure Container Service. It was originally developed by Google, but has since then been donated to the Linux Foundation, and it helps us with the job scheduling. So we, at that point, don't really care about the code. We don't really care about the container. We just tell Kubernetes, we want you to do this work, and Kubernetes takes care of doing whatever it does. So Docker and Kubernetes helps us solve the disparate languages and job scheduling. Now we're left with data provenance and collaboration. And that's where Pachyderm comes in. So Pachyderm in itself is an open source container-based data platform, and it runs right on top of Kubernetes. It borrows a lot of semantics from Git, and in doing so, we're actually able to version our data. So as we go through and change data, you can actually see how your result set was actually calculated given its dependencies. And now that we're able to version both code using Docker and normal CI Git, as well as version data through Pachyderm, it's very easy for us to collaborate with General Fusion and sharing different processing codes or sharing the results. So it's kind of enough talk. Let's kind of show you what we mean and go straight to our demo. So I'll pass it off to John here. We'll walk through kind of a simplified workflow of what we're about to build.
I'm going to get the demo set up. Okay, so we're not going to take a full plasma physics processing pipeline and throw it at you guys. That might be a bit much. So we're going to scale that down a little bit and give you just kind of a sample of what those flows might look like and how this suite of tools has helped us accomplish that goal. So like I was saying previously, we start with the sensor data and we start with some calibration values. And we're going to pass that into, in this case, the processing pipeline is just going to be a simple scaling value. We're just going to scale the data. Maybe we're correcting for units or something like that. That's reasonably common, but there are also far more in-depth processing corrections that we can be doing. The next thing we're going to do is, once we have data that's approximately accurate, we're going to be doing some regressions on that data, combining it. In this case, we're going to take a collection of those signals and average them together and produce some plots. This, of course, stands in for a more complicated regression, but it can show you how the flow might work. I also got to point out that the languages that we're choosing is .NET and Python. Why the choice of those languages? No other than to show you that you don't depend on the particulars of the language. You can use anything that can read from a file or write to a file and put into Docker container, and that will fit into this analysis flow.
OK, so what we have here is just a terminal. I've actually gone ahead and deployed Kubernetes onto Azure, so kubectl get node. And as you can see, we have a three-node cluster. I deployed maybe 2 weeks ago, and it's running version 1.6.0 of Kubernetes. And what I've actually already done is deployed Pachyderm right on top of Kubernetes. And as I mentioned, Pachyderm runs on Kubernetes, and it supports multitude of data stores. So it actually just requires an object store, and Azure Storage is one of the supported Azure backends. So we have two deployments running, etcd and pocd. Etcd is what Pachyderm uses for storing its state, and pocd is the core Pachyderm code. So similar to how we have kubectl to communicate with our Kubernetes cluster, Pachyderm also has its own CLI, and that's called pactl. So I'm just going to go pactl list repo. I've already, actually, prior to coming up here, I actually already, okay.
Do we have dead, some
but I've already seeded the data with the two sensor values, sensor and calibration. Actually, let me fix this. Okay, this time it worked. So as you can see, there's two repositories, raw and calibration. And what raw corresponds to is just that raw sensor value, and calibration is the calibration value. So all these data repositories, you can just think of them as normal, it's another semantic that Pachyderm steals from Git. So you can just think of it as a normal folder, and within that folder is whatever you want to put inside it. So in this case, just taking a peek at inside that repository, you kind of see we have injector one and sensor one. So injector one is really just a folder, and we've done it in this manner such that when experiment number two or three rolls along, we can very easily just plop it into the same data repository without any changes. So let's take a look at one of these CSVs. So I'm going to go pactl get file and the CSV file, and I'm going to pipe it to less. And you'll see it's really actually not a CSV at all. It's a carriage return delimited file of scalar values, about 10,000 of them, kind of boring to look at. So here is a graph of the data.
So what you see here is what might come out of our data acquisition equipment. It's a very finely time-resolved series of one of our sensors. In this case, I believe it's magnetic field. But in this state, this would be raw voltage. This is not very useful. This comes straight from the hardware. Doesn't really reflect much of what we want, what our physicists need or what our engineers need.
So now that we've taken a look at the sensor data, let's take a quick, brief look at what calibration data looks like. So calibration data, I have a simple CSV, and it's really just three values, one, one, and one.
So as I said, we're just going to be doing to scale the data. So for this demo, let's assume that we just brought one of these wonderful machines online, and we don't really have the full calibration set for it yet. So we're just going to put in a placeholder calibration, just set it to Unity, just so we can get the pipelines flowing and our engineers downstream can start looking at the data.
All right, so now that we have the two data repositories, let's actually create a pipeline. So what we want to do is create a pipeline that will take in the two data repositories that we're just looking at, process it, calibrate it, and actually create a new output. So we do that using pactl create pipeline. And then this is what that scale.json file looks like. So here we're creating a new pipeline called scale. We pass it the image name. In this case, it's called scale. And I've actually put it on Azure Container Registry. And as you can see, it's a .NET Core application. And down here is where we define the inputs to this container. So when we create that pipeline, Pachyderm will actually deploy this container onto Kubernetes, and it will feed it these two data repositories. It will feed it raw and calibration. Let's take a quick look at what the code looks like. And let me close this. Okay, so this is the .NET Core code. The meat of it is really here. We're merely just reading from the file. So we're reading the calibrations, reading the sensor values, and this is kind of the magical line right here, where for every one of those scalar values, we are multiplying it by the calibration. In this case, calibration is just one, so the output should be the same. And then again, we just save it to a file. So we save it to a direct path with like a dash scale file. So back to the terminal. So once I've created this pipeline, Pachyderm will actually create this new scaled data repo. So when I go packctl list repo, what you'll now see is a new repo called scale. And it was just created just a moment ago. So within scale, what we should expect to see now is that actual scale data, which in this case is sensor 1 dash scaled in 2 and 3. I'm not going to bother taking a look at the code or taking a look at the data or the graph merely because we use the calibration value of 1. Therefore, the graph would just look the same. So let's skip on to the average pipeline. In a similar fashion, packctl create pipeline dash f average.json. The actual specification looks very similar to what we just saw previously. We have an average pipeline. Again, an average container on Azure Container Registry. And in this case, it's actually a Python application. So as John alluded to, you could use whatever language you want to. R, Python, we just chose .NET Core and Python just for this example. And in this scenario, all we want to feed to this container is that output from the previous one, which we called scale. So to take a look at the code, the average.python, average.py, we have, this is kind of the meat of it. So we read the files, we read every single sensor value, we create a list of a list, and we use NumPy to take the average of every single time value. We save it to the directory, and we then use matplotlib to create a graph out of it. So switch back to our terminal. Now if we take a look at the repos, what we should expect again is a new repo called average. In this case, we do. Well, it was just created a moment ago. Inside that repo, we have two files, injector1 and injector1.png. Injector1 represents that raw data that we just saw. And then injector1 is that graph that we created. So let's take a look at that graph. We're going to grab that file and just save it to the local desktop and then open it. So that new red line, then, is the actual average of all those three sensor files.
OK, so you know what? I just talked to the guys in the back room. And they're telling me that this was actually one of our special calibration shots that we do periodically, the ones where we actually derive our calibrations from. And they're telling me that on those shots, the sensors are supposed to lie on top of each other, actually. So can you adjust those calibrations to get everything to lie on top of one another for me, please?
No problem, John. So Pachyderm is always running. It's always actually watching for changes in this data repository. So whenever we change or add any of the data in the repository, Pachyderm will automatically detect those changes, and it'll flow right through the system. So we do that first by creating a commit. So again, this is another semantic that Pachyderm steals from Git, and allows what commits do is I'm telling Pachyderm to take it what I'm doing as an atomic change. So what I'm going to do is start a commit, delete the existing calibration file, and replace it with new calibrations. So in this case, we have 0.8, 1, and 1.1. And then I finish the commit. So now Pachyderm is like, oh yeah, I have new data. Let me reprocess it. So using those containers, that new data will flow right through the system. So when I now look at the commits for the average repo, what I should expect to see is a new commit. So we have a new commit called 599. And it was just created about 4 seconds ago. So now if I download this new graphic and open it, what you now see is that they all kind of line up.
Perfect. I think the engineers are happy now. Everything seems to be calibrated.
Cool. So that kind of summarizes what we, yeah. Do you want to conclude it?
Oh, sure, I'll conclude.
Oh, wait, this one. Okay.
So that summarizes the work that we were doing with Microsoft to allow us to take that physics data, scale it up, and run it on a larger cluster so that we can turn to the data set that's currently at about 100 terabytes and climbing. General Fusion's currently working on and has some code to make the ingress and egress of this typical science workflow into this platform a little bit easier. We are thinking about open sourcing that code, so if you're interested, you can come talk to me and we can have a discussion. We're going to be walking around the conference center a little bit. If you'd like to know more about our collaboration with Microsoft, there's the blog post there, a link to the company, and some of the tools that we were using. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.